Okay, so we're going to continue moving down the maintenance gradient and start talking about roadside turf grasses, and specifically roadside turf grasses in New England. So what is the problem? First of all, mowed turf is the preferred vegetation, at least within the first 10 meters from the pavement on high-speed roads. This is what the Department of Transportation people call the clear zone. It's where if something goes wrong and you need to escape off the road, you can bring your vehicle to a stop without hitting a tree. That's basically the idea here. In New England, if you don't mow it, you get trees. So it gets mowed. 75 to 90% of the de-icing salt that the Department of Transportation applies to the roadside enters the roadside environment, and primarily within that 10-meter zone. As a result, the perennial grasses die out, especially within 3 meters of the pavement, which leads to two problems. First of all, aesthetic. This is crabgrass here. This is cool season turf. Okay? This is every typical highway in Rhode Island. They all look like this. The other problem is that because the crabgrass is dead for us from September through May, we get heavy spring and fall rains, we get massive leaching. This one particular event was we got 8 inches of rain on frozen ground. And it just carved gullies all along all the roads where there was no vegetation to hold the soil in place or to slow the water. Now, add to this the fact that the roadside itself is an engineered environment, and it's been engineered to rapidly drain water from the pavement. So the roadside is sloped, and you can sort of see that in these pictures. You've got a slope running down from the pavement into the ditch, and the distance varies, but it's generally all of it in the clear zone. And this zone receives 2 to 3 times as much water as the zone on the other side of the ditch, simply because in addition to whatever rainfall is happening, you get all the water coming off the pavement. The other thing is that because this soil is designed to drain quickly, it's very coarse textured, and it dries out very quickly between rain events, which is exacerbated by the hot, dry microclimate at vegetation level with the heat coming off of the pavement, lowers the relative humidity, you add in the constant wind from passing vehicles, it becomes a very harsh environment for a plant. And in New England, this roadside soil is often very high in sand and gravel, it has a very low pH, it's quite acidic, and it has a very low cation exchange capacity. We have essentially no clay in our soil, and there's very little organic matter. The grass that's put in these areas is sprayed on as hydro seeding by contractors, and once the contractor leaves, it receives no inputs other than rough mowing. So, our challenge was to figure out a way to improve grass survival under these conditions. The study design, we had two locations in Rhode Island. They were about as far apart as you can get and still be in Rhode Island. One is on Interstate 95 in southwestern Rhode Island. The other is up on Interstate 295 in northeastern Rhode Island. And they'll be referred to as the 95 and 295 sites. We had three soil treatments that we were looking at. A 50% biosolids native soil mix, a 50% yard waste compost native soil mix, and unamended soil. We did our soil amendments by percentages rather than in a more typical kilograms per hectare, because when the DOT specs out a project, the topsoil is coming in from outside. And so they look at it as a soil mix, sort of like a greens mix or a potting mix, where the contractor would mix up this mix and then apply it to the roadside. We also looked at 22 grass varieties representing 7 different cool season species. And we installed lysimeters and runoff traps at each study location, as well as at 4 other locations around the state of Rhode Island. Once the plots had been established, all maintenance was provided by DOT crews, so they were receiving exactly the same maintenance as the surrounding roadside. We had 3 replications per soil treatment at each location. We established the plots in September 2007. Data was collected through August 2009, so essentially a 2-year study. We evaluated the turf plots for percent cover in November of 2007, basically an establishment rating. And then in April, May, July, and November of 2008, and April, June, and August of 2009. The May one, because of time limitations, we wound up only taking data at the 95 site. We also evaluated for quality, height, and summer dormancy, but I'm not really going to talk about those today. The data was analyzed using ANOVA and Duncan's multiple range. I did use repeated measures ANOVA for the soil amendment portion. So I'm going to talk first about the soil amendments. We did have a significant location effect. The composts and biosolid treatments, however, established significantly better than the soil at both locations. And at both locations, biosolids gave the most cover and plain soil the least. So even though there was an interaction, the order was the same at treatments was the same at both locations. We did see a distinct decline in the biosolid treatment in the last collection in August 2009. And that was because we had a severe invasion of quackgrass that took over the plots. The other thing that caused a major difference in this is that at 295, the plain soil treatment died out completely in the first summer. You could not tell that we had ever had plots there. Okay, differences in the soil amendment plots were readily apparent following spring greenup in 2008. And you can see in this picture, this is the biosolids plot, this is the compost plot, and this is the plain soil plot. Same day, you know, only difference is the soil amendments in here. And basically, you know, it's all the world of difference. The biosolids plots were extremely lush, while the soil plots are extremely chlorotic with thin cover, you know, and just not growing at all. And this, by the way, these pictures were taken before the first mowing of the year. The greatest loss of cover occurred during a drought period from June through August of 2008. And basically what happened is that the drought sent everything into dormancy. The compost and soil plots never really recovered. They never regained their cover after going dormant. And as I mentioned, at 295, the soil plots disappeared completely. So here you have September. This is the same plots as you saw earlier. You can see the biosolid one is still predominantly turf grass. The plain soil, you can see a few clumps in here, but it's mostly crabgrass. The compost, you have more turf grass, but you still have a lot of crabgrass coming in. We also looked at differences between the turf grass species themselves. And again, we did have a location by treatment interaction that was significant, so each treatment at each location is examined separately. But what we found is that at both locations, on the biosolids, tall fescue, red fescue, and Kentucky bluegrass did best. At the 95 location, on plain soil, red fescue and tall fescue did best. There were no differences at 295 because everything died. And then on the compost, it was tall fescue and red fescue again. So basically what we're seeing here is that the Kentucky bluegrass does well when you've got the biosolids in the mix, but you pull them out of the mix and it doesn't do well. Interestingly, Idaho bentgrass did better in compost than in biosolids at the 95 location, but not at 295. At 295, it did better in biosolids. Alkali grass, you can see on here, is much superior at 295. And we think that that is a result of mowing practices, which differed between the two sites because they're managed by different maintenance units. In 2008, we had the major budget problems hit. The unit that manages the 295 site cut staff, and as a result, they did not mow that site from July all the way through into late September. This happens to be when the alkali grass was in flower. It did not get mowed, and as a result, it seeded like crazy. And what we saw with the alkali grass that makes it appear to do much better is that actually it became effectively an annual, in that the established plants died out, but we kept getting new crops of seedlings. Because again, in 2009, we had a wet year, we still had the budget issues, they didn't mow that plot at all, that site at all. I think they finally mowed it once in the fall sometime. So the alkali grass was able to self-seed there, whereas at the 95 site, they were mowing, and so it was never able to self-seed. Tufted hair grass, in contrast, did much better at the 95 site, and one possibility there is that the salt levels are significantly higher at 295. It's in a much snowier portion of the state, and so they salt a lot more. So, what does all of this mean? First of all, it's pretty clear that amendment with 50% biosolids greatly improves quality and persistence of turf. You still have significant turf cover after 2 years, whereas without amendment, you have basically nothing after 2 years. Compost is less effective than biosolids, but still significantly better than plain soil. And it is as good or better than biosolids for grasses adapted to low inputs at 95, but not at 295. And part of this is that when salinity stress is seasonal, which it is in Rhode Island, we don't have salinity stress during the summer, only during the winter. Persistence depends a lot on the ability of the grass to recover from stress, rather than simply the ability of the grass to survive that stress. And that recovery is limited by nutrient deficiency and drought. Okay, if the grass is too deficient in nutrients, it can't recover. If we have drought and it goes dormant again, it can't recover. You know, and basically, eventually, it runs out of resources and dies. And what we found is that with improved soil fertility and moisture retention, moderate salt tolerance is sufficient for the grass to survive. Whereas if you've got severe nutrient deficiency, it doesn't matter how much salt tolerance you have. It's not going to make it. And one of the things that we saw, and the reason why the compost was probably sufficient at 95 rather than at 295, is that in addition to lower salt at 95, the weeds present suggest that it may have a slightly more fertile soil. We did find that too much fertility creates weed problems, especially for grasses tolerant of low fertility and drought. And in fact, the ideal level of biosolids is probably less than the 50% that we used. It would depend on location. The DOT complained that the biosolids plots were too lush. So, these are the acknowledgments, and if we have time for questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Rebecca?
Yes.
Sort of from a practical standpoint, what is the relative cost of the amendments? And given the budget situation that I'm guessing Rhode Island is still in, what is the feasibility for them adopting some of these amendments?
The biosolids are free. They came from one of our sewage treatment plants. Our sewage treatment plants currently deposit their biosolids in the landfill. Rhode Island has one landfill for the whole state, and so the governor is pushing to get everything as they can possibly get out of the landfill, and the biosolids that come from our plant have a very sandy texture, which means that they don't spread well through a manure spreader, so the farmers won't use them. But DOT could get them for free. The compost, again, it came from basically the landfill and the resource reclamation plant facility, as they call it, which is run by the state. So again, DOT might well be able to get it for free. So the only cost would be the cost of mixing it with the topsoil, but that cost, if they write it into the specifications, they go with lowest bidder. And if the specifications say that the contractor has to do this, then that would minimize that cost because they want to get the lowest bid. Yes?
What would be the effect of these amendments on the ability of the till to survive the salt? Because these amendments, they're going to cause more retention of that salt water for a long period of time. Have you thought about that?
We did think about that, and it's an excellent question. And in fact, we designed the study with lysimeters in each of the plots, hoping to look at exactly that. Unfortunately, we discovered that the roadside is a very unfriendly place for lysimeters, and none of the lysimeters that were in these plots themselves actually survived. The plots, I should say, I forgot to mention it in the design, but you can probably tell from the pictures, were located, they were 4 foot by 8 foot, measured starting at the edge of the pavement. So they were located right along the pavement. And as a result, we got a fair amount of vehicular traffic through our plots. And yeah, the lysimeters, that were in the plots did not hold up, and we were not able to get that data. But I will say that while the biosolids may well have increased the salt level, the added benefits of the nutrients and the greater moisture seems to have been much greater than the deficit of the added salt. And when you consider that in our situation, everything gets completely leached during each growing season. Because we do have a very seasonal salt, I don't know that it would actually cause a problem. We certainly didn't see any visual evidence that it caused a problem. Other questions? Yes?
This is kind of off on a tangent. With that heavy of a selection pressure with that salt, have you ever seen any types arise that tolerate the conditions slightly better than the whole?
Not so much in the plots themselves, but we've also done extensive roadside vegetation surveying. And what we're finding is that really the only perennial grass that we find in that high salt, high drought zone is quack grass. And in fact, quack grass is taking over our roadsides. It comes in, we think, on the erosion control bales, which in our part of the world are hay, not straw, and there tend to be quack grass hay, and it spreads like crazy. We are finding that, most of the other grasses, they grow fine once you get outside of that high salt zone, but they don't go into it. Other questions?